What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a scene, baby, me and you. On my rocking bicycle that's built for two. And today's show is going to be from the beyond. Today is February 7th, 2018. Thanks for tuning in to Out There Today. If you heard Out There any of the past three Wednesdays, it was actually recorded shows I had planned because I was out of town. And I just got back yesterday, so I have some new material from my travels. If you're driving while you're listening to this, be real careful on the snow out there. Watch out for plows. So I was traveling. I went to Kentucky to see my family like I usually do. And it involved some tricky maneuvering getting in and out of Knoxville, Tennessee, from there, from the bus station there to my parents' place. I also went to Texas to see a friend of mine who's locked up out there. I don't think I'm going to have time today to play any clips from that trip, but maybe in a future week I'll play some of that. I went to see my friend. There's some past episodes about my friend. I call him Pat on the past episodes. Those episodes, one of them is called, I think it's called Letters from a Ex-Sex Offender. Anyway, so stay tuned in a future week for some, maybe report back from that. So for today's show, I have an interview with Neda Ives. She is from Hadley, works in Amherst, and she actually gave me a ride for the first leg of my trip from Florence down to New York. And she talks about the farm book and plow at Amherst College, where she works. And she's got some little story about shoving snow from the greenhouse, the farm greenhouse roofs in during a snowstorm back in January. But I imagine there might be some similar challenges today with how wet and heavy the snow is. I also have an interview with Amadou Kamara, who is a taxi cab driver that I met in Knoxville. And he talks a little bit about his ideas and desires to try and make the cab business that he's part of there more sustainable and cooperative-minded. Also, I have an interview with Annie Sullivan Chin, who I stayed with in New York and Brooklyn, who used to be a pedal person and now is part of a bookkeeping cooperative in Brooklyn. And she talks about a toolbox, a cooperative toolbox for financial literacy that she's been part of creating for the past year or so. And if there's time, I hope there's time, we'll also play, I've got like a 10-minute sort of dialogue, myself dialoguing, of trying to hitchhike from Knoxville, Tennessee up to Kentucky last week. So we'll start with the interview with Neda.
Book and Plow is a farm at Amherst College.
And
a vegetable farm.
And so, Neda, how long have you worked at Book and Plow?
I've worked at Book and Plow for 3 seasons, and I'm starting my 4th.
And what's your role there?
I am now the farm manager / there's some slashes, but I don't know what the actual words are. But doing some on-campus stuff, some education-related activities, but mostly farm manager is the official title.
And what do you do when the winter storms come and it's really snowy? You were telling me about one of the latest snowstorms that found you in the greenhouse.
Yes, during the big snowstorm, I had just delivered a bunch of food to the dining hall, all root vegetables from the storage, and I wanted to knock the snow off of the greenhouses before I left for the day.
Why?
If the snow builds up and it gets really heavy, it can either break right through the plastic of the greenhouse or make the hoops collapse into each other or bend and then kind of misshape the greenhouse. And ideally the snow would just fall off the roof, but it was just really heavy and came on so fast, it was kind of freezing and holding against the ribs. So I got a ladder, and I had one big T-shaped broom that I taped to another broom for a handle extension, and just would climb up the ladder and pop the broom up against the plastic over and over again to knock the snow off. And I just did that for about 3.5 hours. And
wait a minute, 3.5 hours of just like lifting up and
yeah, and pushing against a weight, and climbing up and down a ladder. And I was really tired, and sometimes I would just yell to myself, "I'm so tired. I'm very tired right now," but there was no one to hear me.
Wow. It sounds exhausting. When you were in high school and college, you did some sports, probably good training for this constant lifting. What kind of sports did you play?
Yeah, I was a 8-season shot putter, discus thrower, and I played football for 1 season. So I spent a lot of time throwing and lifting heavy stuff, and falling down, and did a lot of weightlifting, like deadlifts and squats, and definitely prepped my body well for growing root vegetables and lugging them around.
You were saying that at Amherst College you get volunteers from some of the sports teams?
Yeah, they come out and do some kind of community events, like cleaning up the farm or picking food for donation mostly is when they're there. But yeah, this past season we had some members of the track and field teams, and we had the baseball team come out. And when I was farming in Virginia, I originally found the job posting for Book and Plow because I was searching on the internet for farms that work with sports teams or that have sports teams come help them do jobs.
Wait, why was that important to you?
I thought it would be fun. I was tired of mulching tomatoes, like spreading hay over tomatoes all by myself. And I was thinking about who would be a good population of people to help me do this job, and could imagine high school Maida or college Maida, that's me, coming out to a farm with my team and just having a really fun time working as a team to do a job. And I also thought that people who are kind of on teams or athletes would do well with farming because you're moving as fast as you can and being really physical and kind of looking for better ways to do each job. And that's something I do every day. So Book and Plow happened to have on their website that sports teams come help them. So I was excited about that. And that's how I got here.
Any of the sports teams that are your favorite to work with?
Well, I have to recognize the women's track and field team at Amherst College because they come out to the farm every semester, every year, and have demonstrated great capability in myriad tasks, from seeding to potting up when you like take tiny plants and put them in slightly bigger containers, they helped us plant parsley. No, they helped us weed parsley, like champs. But I think they each bring their own skill. I guess each team kind of has their own energy and vibe that they do great with. Baseball is so fun. Hockey is really fun.
I remember once when I was hoeing at the food bank farm being like, oh, this is like playing hockey.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, and what did the hockey team do? Sometimes we try to turn it into a race, but I think they were carrying stakes, so it's like kind of like carrying, if you were carrying 40 hockey sticks around, I don't know why you'd do it. And women's hockey came and was picking tomatoes. With the baseball team, at the end of like a cleanup, we have done some batting practice with some rotten squash, and that's pretty fun too.
So you recently had a meeting with an organization called Land.
What? It's called Land for Good. It's a New England-based organization that works to connect farmers with individuals or companies that have land to be farmed on. And so they work a lot on the leasing agreements and kind of the land access question, trying to, and they'll work with both sides. They'll work with farmers, and they also work with landowners to do kind of a matchmaking. And the aim behind it is to keep farmland as farms and increase opportunity for beginning or transitioning farmers, and just help with, you know, if someone's transitioning out of farming but wants to keep the business alive, helping them meet a good match for that.
That's cool. Land for Good. Why the meeting with Amherst College people?
Yeah, we're doing a neat, so Book and Plow, we're doing a neat research project this winter. There are three students who are doing what's called a Design Think Challenge, and Book and Plow is the sponsor. And they're looking at the role that a campus farm can play in the local ag community. There's lots of farms in the area. There's two other college farms right nearby, UMass and Hampshire. And the students are just interviewing stakeholders, getting a sense of the challenges, and will make some recommendations for further research or relationships that the Book and Plow and Amherst College specifically could build, because we're still a relatively young farm. Yeah, so there we had Land for Good as our first community interview, and we'll talk to some farmers and some other organizations and individuals as they go through their process.
Very cool. Anything else you want to talk about or add?
Just stay hydrated. pretty important to me in general. The students who come work on the farm, we say, you'll come learn about farming, and you'll do the work it takes to grow vegetables, and maybe you'll hate it, but that's okay. Maybe you'll love it. That's fine too. But the one thing we hope you learn is to stay hydrated and listen to how your body feels and make observations and ask questions. So that's what I think about every day.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. That was an interview with Maida Ives, who's a farm manager at Book and Plow Farm at Amherst College. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Today's show is clips from my recent travels south to Kentucky, and traveling with Maida was the first step. The next clip is, you know what, I'm going to play this 1 minute thing from Knoxville, Tennessee, when I got off the bus. I travel by bus most of the time, except for the carpool with Maida, and that definitely, I took the bus all the way to Texas and back, all in all, and definitely saw a lot of class issues and class divisions on this trip.
Where were you? What happened?
Well, this is my first time in Knoxville, and there was a big crowd of bums who were standing in the edge of the bus station because they were trying to escape the cold, because it's like 18 degrees out there. And one of the hobos was being told by one of the secretaries that they had to leave, and they had nowhere else to go, so they were going to freeze. And so the two of them just got into, like, you know, this huge argument in the middle of the bus station, and one was swearing and one was giving religious curses, and I don't know, it was something I didn't expect in Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
You know, so.
What ended up happening?
Well, they all ended up having to leave, and let's hope they found somewhere to go.
Yeah. What time, this is last night, what time of night or morning was this?
This was about 3 in the morning, and I mean, from the looks of this town, this is probably something that happens on a regular basis.
Yeah.
you know, the bathroom has a whiskey bottle sitting in the bottom of it, you know.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that in all the bus stations I was in, especially in the wee hours of the morning, when people just were looking for a place to go, and sometimes it seems like they would shuffle between the bus station and McDonald's just looking for somewhere warm. All right, so the next clip is an interview with a taxi driver that I met in Knoxville.
Well, my name is Amadou Kamara. I'm a taxi driver in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I started a taxi cab company about 12 years ago, and the idea was just about to create a company that offered a better service than what I saw around. So the longer I've been in it, the more I cared about people. I met a lot of great people in the cab business, and I got to see the positive sides of a lot of people that I've met, and I cared about the environment too. So I've been always thinking about a sustainable way to do what I do, because I enjoy it, meeting people and being able to make a difference in their life, even if it's like a few minutes, making them smile, making them feel better, making them get to where they need to get to on time. So it's been fun. So right now I'm really, with all these transportation companies popping up and using technology, I've been trying to figure out how to actually get taxi cab companies to leverage technology, but also be more efficient and reduce their carbon footprint, maybe, and make a difference in the world like everybody else is doing, like Rudy is doing right now. I enjoy talking to her and learning from her, and she asked me to say something about the idea, so that was it.
Yeah, so you were talking kind of about like different cab companies or drivers from different cab companies collaborating to make it more efficient for everybody, right?
Correct. Yeah, I've always thought that if somebody can do something good, maybe he can get better at it by just collaborating with somebody else who probably work for the same goal or who has the same ambition. Yeah. So I've been testing some of these cab company owners, talking to them about how we could get together and, you know, try to be more efficient and, you know, making things happen maybe a lot quicker, since we're competing anyway with Uber. So it's like Uber or the other companies.
It sounds to me similar to the trash hauling situation in Northampton, where you've got like, there's like five or six different haulers, trucking companies and pedal people, and you'll have a different trucking company going down the same street like every day of the week. All this like overlap and inefficiency, if we could all get together and say like different ones service different neighborhoods, it would just make it so much more efficient for everybody and the air cleaner for everybody.
Right, definitely. I think it's a great idea, and I think we usually just stuck on, you know, how we can do good ourselves, like how I can do good myself, how I can make more money, how I can make a difference in the world, maybe by myself. But profit, I think, is possible by working together and being more efficient, and connecting with the right people is a must. And I think this is a good channel to connect with the right people, right?
Yeah, it'd be cool to see like a cab cooperative, the Knoxville Cab Cooperative or something.
Exactly. And some people like the idea, some of the people in the cab business. So We're working on it. We just have to maybe stop procrastinating and get on it. And some people can help, and we can use all the help we can get with ideas. So if anybody knows anything that's going on out there that's, you know, making a bigger difference than just a smaller group, that's something that touches, you know, people in general, like a bigger group of people, like to hear about it. And I think I learn from anybody, so Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk with you a little bit, and I hope we get to talk some more sometimes.
That was Amadou Kamara, cab driver in Knoxville, Tennessee. We met because I had come out of the bus station and I had to go like 10 or 11 miles and I wasn't sure exactly what route I needed to take. I had like a scooter in my legs and I was like, oh, a cab driver. They know directions. And so I asked him for directions and he pulled out his computer phone and looked up Google Maps for me and showed the directions and it was just like super helpful and we had a nice connection and then we just like ended up talking more. So if anyone has any ideas about increasing efficiency in the cab business, you can contact me and I'll spread the word to Amadou. Before I go to the next clip, which is Annie Sullivan Chin talking about cooperatives and financial literacy, let's take a little break and listen to some Israel Vibration.
I see the sun shining today. Don't know what it's going to bring. You see, I give thanks to come what's may. Of my meaty muscles, I surely thankfully receive. Ain't gonna sit down here, cry, worry, no grief. Yeah. I give a little air, I give a little there, and I keep a little before myself. Life is so unfair, yet it's good to share when they try to help someone else. Never see the rings behind the earth. You cannot hold on to your golden purse. If there is nothing that you can do, helping someone worse off than you. I give a little air, I give a little there, and I keep a little for myself. Life is so unfair, yet it's good to share, but it's nice to have someone else. Break a bread, sup of tea, a fish for you and a fish for me. Or there is nothing that you can do, helping someone worse off than you. It's my master's will that I see the sun shining today. Don't know what it's gonna bring, but I give thanks, come what may. Off my knees and muscles, I surely thankfully receive. Ain't gonna sit down here, cry, worry, or grieve. Yeah, I give a little air, I give a little there, and I keep a little for myself. Life is so unfair, yet it's good. Here and it's nice to help someone else.
be so unfair, but it's good to share, and it's nice to have someone.
Every day,
all over the world,
men, women,
and children
are brutally tortured
simply for their identity or their beliefs.
That's why Amnesty International speaks out
to protect people's basic human rights.
Call 1-800-AMNESTY.
It's your human right.
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. The Bike Lab will be back in action this Saturday. It was kind of closed. No, Dwayne was there last week, but the winter time, we're not always open, but I'll be around this Saturday from 11 to 2, so come on out if you can, especially if you've been biking around in this weather. Your bike's probably got some salty, salt, frozen moisture or water damage, or, you know, it could use some maintenance, so you can come and have a dry, chilly basement to clean it in. At 12 Northern Avenue. Next up on Out There, here on Valley Free Radio WXOJ 103.3 FM in Northampton, is an interview with Annie Sullivan Chin, who lives in Brooklyn and used to be a coworker of mine in Pedal People.
Yeah, so what are you doing? What is one of your projects? Tell me about this project, Annie, that you were telling me about before.
Yeah, I'm working on this amazing collaboration with Tessa Tulox for Education and Social Action, Kieran, who is a founding member of AORTA, the Anti-Oppression Resource and Training Alliance, and Alex Fisher from Open Bookkeeping, who's another bookkeeper and finance and social justice aficionado, and myself, a bookkeeping cooperative. Mm-hmm. So we're developing a toolkit that's going to be, we're creating curriculum now. It'll be self-facilitated, so it's actually built for folks that have more experience in their co-ops or in their organizations as facilitators, and as opposed to those who have more of the financial knowledge, because part of what we're doing is in addition to providing like financial literacy training with this toolkit, we're also providing a framework and exercises to uproot systems of oppression that we see in our organizations. And a lot of times, financial knowledge comes with privilege, and we want to upend that by that structure just right off the bat.
Okay, so this is like specifically geared towards co-ops, helping the people, especially the not male people, understand the finances. True?
True. Yeah, true. And we are expanding the audience to not just co-ops, but to really almost any democratically organized, group. So it could be a collective or a nonprofit or a more traditionally structured small business. But the language does, we do talk about things that are co-op specific, like patronage and profit sharing, and particular, member dynamics and things like that you do see more often in co-ops.
Just the term financial literacy gives me the willies and makes me think I can't do it.
That's a great place to start. We actually like one of the first things that we did was we created a glossary, and built and wrote and co-created definitions for folks that, you know, where it's, you know, vocabulary is such a fundamental place to start. And yeah, when you throw the word financial around, it can bring up a lot of feelings. And we don't want that to be okay. You know, I mean, it's okay to have feelings, and we're not, we're building this so that people can, be aware of that and be aware of those feelings and work through them and process them in a constructive and empowering way. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, financial literacy is one of those things that, I think now in my work, I use it almost without thinking about it. And it's helpful to hear that, like, over and over again, every time I do a workshop or every time I even, like, mention, you know, that I work with finances, I get, you know, somebody that has that reaction. And it's really helpful for me to, mm-hmm. you know, to embrace that and also help people embrace that in their feelings and not let that be a reason to defer or feel, you know, paralyzed or disempowered.
Yeah. Well, I remember I got an email in my inbox from you maybe a month ago that went out to a bunch of cooperatives, I believe. And the title was something about, you know, financial literacy workshops, I think.
Yeah.
And I kept that email in my inbox for a long time, and I would stare at that title every so often and be like, it was kind of like a tease. It's kind of like, oh, I should learn about this. Ooh, I don't know. Oh, this looks interesting. I should learn about this. I don't know. And I kept sinking lower and lower into my inbox, like pages and pages down. And then I was like, all right, that was too old. I'm not going to get to that one.
Yeah, yeah.
But so eventually your goal, for this project will be, like, something online, is something on paper. You talked about Andrew from Tessa making, sort of gamifying it to make it interesting and engaging.
Right.
What format will it take?
Totally. So the format will be a downloadable PDF with embed. Like, it will also be accompanied by my, like, sort of multimedia, you know, elements. So we're gonna have the overall format is going to be something that you can download and print, because there are some of the games are actually things physical cards that you'll want to print out and cut up and then use when you're playing that particular game, for example. Tutorials and instruction that are in video format and audio. It's going to be fully bilingual in English and Spanish, and so we're putting a lot of time and effort into making both the physical materials and the supplemental, like, media bilingual. We're working with primarily in this moment, a translation and interpretation cooperative that's based here in New York City called Caracol. Uh-huh. So a lot of the instruction sheets will be both visually printed, so words or that you can watch on a screen, whichever you prefer, you know, to reach all, you know, as many learning styles as possible, having, you know, audio instruction and video as well.
You mentioned when we first started talking about structures of oppression being repeated, you know, in collectives or in organizations, and understanding of finances. Like, how do you see that in the work that you've done? Like, I mentioned, like, gender, mm-hmm. or, you know, male or right. whatever, but in other ways, like, who do you see that tends to have the financial knowledge, and how can, well, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think the traditional system power, I mean, it intersects definitely with gender, also, with race and class. You know, we see we see typically like white and male people in the world of finance. We know that to get a degree, to get a license in you know, accounting, for example, or business, you know, to get an MBA, it requires a, like, access to to a high level of education that is super expensive in this country. And so that's what we're mainly, and then when you see these folks providing their services, they're mostly providing them in a context of where it's very individual. You know, they are, you know, there are the accountants, they are, you know, and even if they are more like collectively minded, you do see that, but we do see a pattern in terms of the group dynamics, as if they are within a, you know, within the co-op, like, who do you see handling the finances and why? So we start out with that, asking those very basic questions, because just to speak to a pattern that we observe. And that may not be the case for every group, by any means. We mean to just call attention to a pattern that we see, and how it represents an overall privileging of financial information and skills to you know, typically to white and cisgender male individuals.
What's the name of the bookkeeping collective that you're part of?
A bookkeeping cooperative.
ABC?
ABC.
Do you just work in the New York City area, or do you have clients from beyond?
Beyond New York City and beyond. Yeah, it's exciting. We're working with folks all over the U.S., and we actually have some clients that have some, you know, that have some offices in other countries, in Nicaragua, for example, or Jordan and Lebanon. We have a couple of clients that have that are all over. But most of our work is local at the moment. But we definitely are set up for servicing clients that are all over. It's just with the technology these days.
How many people are part of it?
We have, let's see, three folks on the like core team. And we have one person that is a part-time bookkeeper that's a non-owner worker. And then we have two candidate members who are coming on. One just started and the other is coming on in a few weeks.
Do you have time for another question?
Yeah, sure.
So what has your process been like for becoming financially literate?
Great question. That has been a lot of self-education and, you know, finding people to ask questions that I don't know. I took a couple of, my first experience of seeing any kind of financial statement was with Pedal People, because that was the first co-op that I was a part of. And therefore that was the first time that I had the opportunity to see and the responsibility to see and understand financial statements like our profit and loss and our balance sheet. And that was my first level of exposure. So it definitely piqued a curiosity for me. I really liked the processes that we did, and, you know, as members of Pedal People to understand and make decisions based on our like the state of our finances. So when I moved to New York, I took a couple of classes at Baruch College, which is they were pretty affordable, and I just took the classes a la carte, and then I just have kind of learned on the job, and had to be pretty resourceful, but I enjoy it.
Are there other bookkeeping cooperatives that you know of in like the area, New England, East Coast? Like, if someone from Western Mass wanted bookkeeping work and they wanted to support a cooperative, what would be the most local cooperative that does bookkeeping? You know.
Yeah, from Western Mass, I probably would say us. I don't know of any other folks that are in the like Northeast. I could be wrong though, and I know that there's a startup. now I can't remember exactly where. There's a startup that is somewhere in the Northeast. There is that I can't remember the name of. And then there are a couple of other startups. One is based in Austin and one is based on the West Coast. But I'll need to get the last I've heard from any of these new folks. It was a while back, so I have to brush up on that. The difference between worker-owned cooperatives and employee ownership in the form of the employee stock ownership plan, which is the acronym is ESOP. So you hear people talking about ESOPs and you wonder what that is. And it's a way for a business that is typically, a traditional business with a management structure with hierarchy and so forth, to sell some stock to its employees. Yeah. So in a worker-owned business, in a worker cooperative, we have, closer to 100% worker ownership, although that definition is a little bit loose. Mm-hmm. But definitely you want a majority of worker ownership and the democratic management and governance built into the business structure.
So I've seen these trucks that say Lewis Tree Company, and this says worker-owned on the side of the truck. It sounds like that may be an ESOP. Well, I'll do more research on that before I play that. Are there other examples of ESOPs, or how do you see that used as like a marketing strategy?
Yeah, I try to be pretty aware of what larger businesses, like businesses that sell their products in big retail stores or supermarkets, like what are worker cooperatives? And I know that there are some. Like you'll see, like once again, Nut Butter or King Arthur, I believe, is also partially worker owned, and that is an option that if they're not a worker cooperative, they're most likely an ESOP. So they're offering some option for the employees to buy stock, and it's unclear to me, and that would be a good question to ask. I think if you're buying a product or buying a service that advertises being worker owned, that you ask about that structure. Say, are you a worker cooperative or an ESOP or something different?
Mm-hmm. Cool. Do you want to say the thing about fundraising for the other project?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so in order to make the toolkit free, we are, asking for folks to step up and support if they can and if they think that they'll use it. So that would be, individuals or organizations that that can afford to make a donation to the toolkit. It's paying for our time to build it, and it'll ensure that it's free for folks when they need to use it.
You're saying this is like a year-long project to build this toolkit?
Yeah, we've already been working on it for a year, and we've projected the rest of our work time out actually through 2018, so there's plenty of time.
If people want to find out more or donate, is there like a website or something?
Yes, it's like Tessa's website, like /kit/donate or something like that. It's a little bit, or you can go to Tessa's website and then click on the donate button. There's also a lot of information there in English and in Spanish, and also an article that that Kieran and the rest of us co-wrote to explain like the problem, the systemic issues of patriarchy and white supremacy and how it relates to financial education.
That was an interview with Annie Sullivan Chin talking about the financial literacy toolkit that she's been working on with some other people. Tessa is the website that she had mentioned, Toolbox for Education and Social Action. You can find more information on their website. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP, in Northampton, streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. You can hear archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. There's probably 125 past shows on the archives. Democracy Now! Will be on at 5 o'clock. The next clip I have is about 10 minutes of me talking to myself. This is last week on my travels when I was trying to hitchhike from Knoxville up to meet my brother. I was trying to get home to my parents' place in Kentucky, and I was only trying to hitchhike like 75 miles, and it was kind of difficult. So, nobody's stopping. Anyway, I think I'll just play myself talking, and I noticed when I was editing this clip that I get kind of whiny sounding when I get frustrated. So I hope it's not annoying, and I hope that I can keep that in mind to maybe not be annoying when I get frustrated.
So I told Chris I would meet him in Williamsburg at this interstate exit, like around 3:30 when he gets off work, so he could pick me up and take me home. But all right, I'm going up to Williamsburg. How far are you going? I don't know. Should I take a ride one exit? Because I ain't got nothing here, and it's been an hour and 40 minutes. No, an hour and 45 minutes. Not Merchants Drive and I-75. I got a sign that says KY. Trust me. But I think my luck will be just as good. Who knows? It might be better if I instead wrote on the sign, "Don't trust me." Doesn't seem to matter. But I have had two people stop and offer me rides one exit up, or one or two exits up. And which, I don't know, next time that happens, I might as well say yes, I suppose. But the thing is, if I go two exits up and then I can't get picked up, then I'm that much farther away from public transportation to take me back into Knoxville. I mean, it would get picked up eventually. But anyway, so when I think of my options, I get kind of depressed, because now I'm not going to make it to Williamsburg on time. There's no way, because I'm too far away and I don't have enough time, even if I get picked up now. So I'm trying to think about my options. Go back to Knoxville and call someone. Jim or Chris. The thing is, if I call someone, if I call someone to come pick me up, you know, I've gotten in and out of Knoxville a bunch this trip. This is my third time in 2 weeks, and I need to go back to Knoxville on Sunday. Oh, it just makes me want to cry when I think about transportation and trying to get in and out of here. The bus, trying to get to the bus station with no public transportation. And I hate to ask people to give me rides all the time, because I'm the one that has chosen to not have a driver's license and has chosen to not drive. And I'm the one that's chosen to not have a cell phone, so I can't just call Chris and say, I don't know, figure out another plan. Which, I mean, I'll borrow a phone at some point. Anyway, so, you know, I'm the one that's made these choices, so why should other people have to give me rides all the time? And then I'm like, you know what? I'm also the one that has chosen to not live in a place where there's no public transportation. So, you make your choices and you take your picks or something like that. Yeah, so it's like, well, that's why I've freaking chosen to not live here. This is too hard to get places, and now I'm getting really pissed off. Which is not good for hitchhiking, when you look like you're going to cry or bite someone's head off. At least I don't imagine it's good for hitchhiking. But standing here with a smile, a charming smile, isn't good for hitchhiking either, since I haven't gotten picked up in an hour and 45 minutes. I often think of hitchhiking as a way that I manifest my religion, or as an exercise in faith. And if this is an exercise in faith, I'm afraid I'm losing my... It's coming upon 3 hours that I've been watching cars go by. Not just cars, but cars with motorists inside. And everyone that goes by. As I stand here with my sign that says, Kentucky, trust me. Which probably half of them can't read anyway. All the people that go by as they zoom onto the interstate, I wonder what they're thinking. And they just keep on going by and going by. I think about Bruce. Does he ever blame people for what they don't do?
There's a lot of things that I don't do that I could be blamed for. Where should I blame anyone for not doing something? You know? Are all the immigrants in the United States blaming me for not making those calls to my Congress people about the DACA, about the immigration bill? Are they all blaming me for not doing anything when the six ICE agents were storming the Greyhound station in Atlanta yesterday? Are African Americans blaming me for not stopping police brutality? Not speaking up every time I have a chance? Why would I blame people for not doing something? I did finally find a phone to use to tell Chris I was not going to make it to our scheduled meeting place. That was a big relief. I think I got it on the fifth ask. I was getting ever more desperate with each ask, because the time was winding down and it was only like 4 minutes before he was scheduled to leave work to go pick me up that I finally found a phone to borrow. That was a little stressful. Now I'm not stressed anymore. You know, if someone picks me up, great. If not, I got friends in Knoxville. I'll just go to a friend's house for the night and try again tomorrow. But the day is still young. I'll probably still make it to nowhere land between here and Kentucky. Before sunset. So I've been out here for about 3 hours. I think I've seen a few of the same cars and people go by, and it makes me wonder if they're thinking, who has 3 hours to just stand around and wait for a ride? But then I'm also thinking, well, you know, because I don't have a car, like a lot of people who have cars will spend 3 hours working, doing something they might not enjoy, so they can pay for the car. So I'm just trying to, you know, take advantage of their having paid for the car. No, I'm not trying to take advantage of it. I'll offer them some money. Anyway, just a thought on how we spend our time, how we view the time that we have to live this life. I'm just as alive as anybody else right now, I suppose. Well, this big, long, flatbed, well, not too long, truck pulled up, said Clayton on the side of it. So I got in, and the guy that gave me a ride, he's a repo truck driver. He was driving up to La Follette to repo some car, take it back to Knoxville. Everything's better when you get a ride and you have a nice conversation with someone. So now I'm in La Follette and it's rush hour. I just gotta go up and over Pine Mountain. The Hampton Inn here has llamas grazing in the front yard. From tears to exhilaration in one ride. I was literally crying when this man picked me up. I got in the car with a moist face. But now, I'm on my knees worshiping the ground in Jellicoe, Tennessee. Practically Jellicoe, Kentucky. And my brother is on his way. Hallelujah.
All right, that's my hitchhiking adventure from last week. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Thanks for listening to the show today. A couple of announcements I'd like to make before Democracy Now! Comes on at 5. Let's see, this February is Black History Month. Check out the Coming Together in the website. It's an Amherst-based racial justice group. They got lots of great resources. One event coming up is this Saturday. There's going to be a flag raising for Black History Month at 11 o'clock at the Amherst Town Hall. Hope you can make it. And I'm going to play one more song. This is Bedeo Bubes, I Belong.
man maikan kisemare emang itundu au makai kisemare apa krita ilado kisemare walai berina cimoro kisemare mani lonely ye boy dundu official don job se fisil ma vi ye boy dundu official don job se ta incompli ye boy dundu official don job se identity Apatride, je suis, je n'existe pas. Non, je sais pas qui je suis, je n'ai aucun droit. Je marche au gré du vent, j'ai même perdu la foi. Pour tous ces oubliés, moi je lève la voix. Besoin d'exister, de jouir de la vie, de jouer, de sourire, voyager, me libérer. Des millions dans le chaos, triste réalité. Pour ces millions, moi je réclame une nationalité.
I believe one day, apatride, go Tout ce monde, sa nationalité régularisée, incompris, risque de payer le prix, les assister. Pas de droit, pas de vie, rien depuis pour les libérer.
Mon nom, le nom, le maïkan, qui se marie, des magi au m'accueilli, qui se marie, à patrite et l'ado, qui se marie, pour la hyperina chimoro, qui se marie, mon nom, le nom, le maïkan, qui se marie.
Envie de vivre, besoin d'exister. Qui je suis, je sais pas. Oh non, je n'existe même pas.
Connais ma peine,
glacé le sang qui coule dans mes veines.
Je m'arrive de vivre.
On moquait la patrie, yeah.
Sans papier, ne pas travailler, aller à l'école, yeah. Vouloir me marier, pouvoir voyager, ma vie est bloquée, yeah. I belong, 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 belong. I belong, 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 I belong, 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 belong.
So I wanted to add to the podcast edition of this show, as soon as the show aired and then Democracy Now! Came on, the headline piece on Democracy Now! Was about some of the struggles that taxi cab drivers in New York City are facing, particularly with the business model of Lyft and Uber and the corruption and economic pressures and the political power that Uber and Lyft have and how their business model is driving so many taxi cab drivers into despair and economic ruin. And you can hear that on democracynow.org for the February 7th, 2018 edition.